This is CME on ReachMD. The following activity is provided by Access Medical Education and supported by an educational grant from Lilly. Prior to beginning, please be sure to review the faculty information and disclosure statements, as well as the learning objectives. To access the full presentation, visit reachmd.com/accessmeded. Here's your faculty, Dr. Joshua Baumel.
Hello, and welcome to this educational activity entitled Oncology on Cue, Expert Answers to Common Questions for Optimizing Platinum Refractory Non-Small Cell Lung Cancer Treatment. I'm Dr. Joshua Baumel. I'm an assistant professor of medicine at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This activity will provide my perspective on participant questions from a recent Access Grand Round series on platinum refractory non-small cell lung cancer. Here is a disclaimer and disclosure indicating that we may be discussing off-label use of approved agents or agents that are in development. Here's my financial disclosure information. Here are the learning objectives for this activity. So today, we are going to focus on three main topics that came up in the lecture series. First, we're going to talk about molecular testing. And next, we'll talk about biomarkers and immunotherapy. And then we'll talk about the treatment of rapid progressors on first-line treatment. So our first case, we have a 50-year-old woman who presents with adenocarcinoma of the lung, metastatic to bone and liver. Her tumor has both an EGFR exon 19 deletion and PD-L1 overexpression with 90% tumor staining by the DACO 22C3 assay. Your first-line treatment should be A, osimertinib, B, pembrolizumab, C, carboplatin pemetrexed pembrolizumab, D, carboplatin pemetrexed, or E, unsure. In this case, the correct answer would be A, osimertinib. In this pie chart, what you can see is that non-small cell lung cancer is becoming a more and more heterogeneous disease. This is looking at molecular drivers of cancerous behavior amongst adenocarcinoma of the lung. What I'd like to call your attention to here are, first of all, that the most common mutation, KRAS, unfortunately does not have a targeted therapy. But if you look at EGFR, there are many targeted therapies that are currently FDA approved. I'd also call your attention to the right side of this slide, where we see the large blue section indicating unknown. This does not mean that those tumors do not have a mutation that makes them behave like a tumor. It just means we haven't seen what that is yet. And as we see these ever-shrinking pieces of the pie on the left side of the pie chart, what I'm reminded of is that it's quite likely that you may find a patient who comes in with a result on a next-generation sequencing assay that you've never seen before, and it's important to seek out the appropriate treatment for such patients. So why should we do that? This was from a very important study published by Dr. Chris in JAMA in 2014. They took patients who had non-small cell lung cancer, adenocarcinoma in particular, and did a rather limited next-generation sequencing assay on those tumors. And what they found was that for those patients who had a targetable alteration and received a targeted therapy, their median overall survival was over a year longer than those patients who had only an oncologic driver and did not receive a targeted therapy. And here, this is important because when we think about patients with EGFR mutations or ALK translocations, they tend to be young, never smokers who would overall tend to have a better prognosis anyway. But what we can see in this study is that we really are changing outcomes for these patients with the addition of TKI. So EURTAC was the first study that evaluated a TKI versus chemotherapy in established EGFR mutation positive non-small cell lung cancer. Patients were randomized to erlotinib 150 milligrams daily or a platinum doublet. And what you can see here is that the progression-free survival was much better for those patients receiving erlotinib. And we can also see that the toxicity profile was different with erlotinib as opposed to chemotherapy. Of course, with a higher rate of rash and diarrhea for erlotinib and a higher rate of cytopenias for cytotoxic chemotherapy. But what you can see when you think about this is that when you look at the progression-free survival and the response rate, and this is from multiple trials comparing a tyrosine kinase inhibitor to chemotherapy, the response rate and progression-free survival are much higher for the TKI than they are for chemo. But if you look at overall survival, you see that there's not a significant improvement in overall survival in these studies. And one of the reasons that's thought to be is that there was significant crossover from chemotherapy to a TKI in these studies, and that likely would diminish any survival benefit that we would see. Taking a look at osimertinib, this was originally developed as a tyrosine kinase inhibitor to be used for patients refractory to a first or second generation tyrosine kinase inhibitor that had developed the T790M mutation, the most common resistance mutation to a first or second generation TKI. And what we can see here is that in this waterfall plot, a remarkable response rate for the drug. This led to the FLORA study, which evaluated osimertinib as the first-line treatment as compared to erlotinib or gefitinib at investigator's discretion for patients with EGFR mutant non-small cell lung cancer. And what we saw, and this has subsequently been published, is that osimertinib was associated with a marked increase in progression-free survival. And osimertinib also had an improved safety profile with a lower rate of rash as compared to standard of care. There was a slightly higher rate of stomatitis and diarrhea, but these were not a large difference between the groups. So in the case study that we presented at the beginning of this discussion, I noted that the patient had a PD-L1 expression of greater than 50%. And some may have thought to give the patient immunotherapy. It's important to remember that most studies that evaluated immunotherapy in non-small cell lung cancer excluded patients with EGFR mutation. And the reason for that is seen on this slide. What you can see here is that if you look at patients with EGFR wild type, it's clear that PD-1 and PD-L1 inhibitors are superior to docetaxel in the second-line studies. However, if you look below at the EGFR mutant non-small cell lung cancer, there is no incremental benefit to the addition of immunotherapy for such patients over docetaxel. It just doesn't seem to work as well in this patient population. So what about first-line immunotherapy trials? As I mentioned, most of them excluded patients with EGFR mutation or ALK translocation. So KEYNOTE-24, which led to the approval of first-line pembrolizumab monotherapy, as well as KEYNOTE-21G, the combination of carboplatin, pemetrexed, pembrolizumab, both of these studies excluded patients with EGFR mutation. And so it would not be appropriate to utilize either of these regimens first-line for a patient with EGFR mutation. It should be noted that the EMPOWER 150 study, which evaluated carboplatin, taxane, bevacizumab, and atezolizumab, did allow patients who had EGFR mutation or ALK translocation, but they needed to have failed a prior tyrosine kinase inhibitor. So it's important to remember that for patients with a targetable aberration, we should give them the targeted therapy. So in summary, just what I said there. If they have a target, we should use it. Osimertinib led to improved progression-free survival as compared to gefitinib or erlotinib in the FLORA study, and immunotherapy may have reduced efficacy amongst patients with EGFR mutation. Let's go on to topic number two. So we have another case. We have a 65-year-old man who presents with widely metastatic adenocarcinoma of the lung. He is relatively asymptomatic. His tumor is found to have overexpression of PD-L1, staining 60% of the tumor by the DACO 22C3 assay. His next-generation sequencing assay does not reveal any targetable aberration. So what should his first-line treatment be? A, carboplatin, pemetrexed, and pembrolizumab. B, pembrolizumab, C, carboplatin gemcitabine, D, either A or B, or E, unsure. In this case, the correct answer would be D, either A or B. Let's talk a little bit about why that is. So the first study that established that the choice of chemotherapy may be important based upon histology was this study led by Dr. Scagliotti, where patients with advanced non-small cell lung cancer were randomized to either cisplatin pemetrexed or cisplatin gemcitabine. And what they found was that while in the intention to treat analysis there was no difference between the two arms, when we look at patients with non-squamous non-small cell lung cancer, cisplatin pemetrexed was associated with improved overall survival. It's on this basis that in the case we described, the use of a gemcitabine-based approach would be less than optimal. But how about the incorporation of immunotherapy? Remember, we said that this patient had a PD-L1 staining of 60%. KEYNOTE-24 looked at patients with greater than 50% staining for PD-L1 and randomized them to either pembrolizumab monotherapy or a platinum doublet of the investigator's choosing. As I mentioned before, patients with EGFR mutations or ALK translocations were not allowed to enroll. What we can see in the toxicity profile is what we have already experienced with these drugs, is that pembrolizumab was much better tolerated than cytotoxic chemotherapy. The incidence of grade 3 to 5 immune-related adverse events was 9.7% with pembrolizumab and obviously would not be seen as much with cytotoxic chemotherapy. The rate of grade 3 to 5 pneumonitis was 2.6%. But if we take a look at all treatment-related adverse events, it's 26.6% for grade greater than 3 for pembrolizumab and 53.3% for cytotoxic chemotherapy. That's a significant difference that we're seeing here. If we take a look at the results, you can see that both the overall and progression-free survival favored the use of pembrolizumab. And based upon these data, pembrolizumab monotherapy became the standard of care for patients with PD-L1 overexpressing non-small cell lung cancer. These results were presented in updated fashion at last year's World Conference on Lung Cancer in Japan, and Dr. Bramer showed that we did finally reach the median overall survival for patients receiving pembrolizumab at 30 months. This is over double what was seen for cytotoxic chemotherapy. KEYNOTE-189 was a phase 3 study that evaluated whether we could improve outcomes over chemotherapy in a different way. So instead of comparing chemotherapy to pembrolizumab alone, this compared carboplatin pemetrexed placebo to carboplatin pemetrexed and pembrolizumab. This was following up on a positive phase 2 study, the KEYNOTE-21G trial. What we can see in terms of toxicity was that the addition of pembrolizumab to cytotoxic chemotherapy did not substantially alter the toxicity profile. There was a slightly higher rate of events leading to discontinuation, about 20% versus 10.9%, but it was generally a well-tolerated combination. What we can see here in the intent-to-treat analysis, both the overall and progression-free survival favored the triplet of carboplatin pemetrexed pembrolizumab over carboplatin pemetrexed with placebo. And if we break the overall survival down by PD-L1, what you can see is that there was an improvement in overall survival at all levels of PD-L1 staining. This is important because prior to this study being reported, many were worried that the positivity seen in KEYNOTE-21G was driven entirely by the greater than 50% population. And we can see here that while the greater than 50% population has the largest difference between the triplet and the placebo arm, there was still an improvement in overall survival that reached statistical significance in patients who are PD-L1 negative. And so in summary, we know that pemetrexed is associated with a better overall survival than gemcitabine as a platinum partner for non-squamous non-small cell lung cancer. But if we go back to the case, a patient with PD-L1 overexpressing non-small cell lung cancer, it would be reasonable to give them either pembrolizumab, which has been associated with an improved overall and progression-free survival over platinum doublet non-small cell lung cancer, or carboplatin, pemetrexed, and pembrolizumab, which has also been associated with improved overall and progression-free survival over platinum doublet in non-squamous lung cancer. I'd like to move on to topic three. This is the treatment of rapid progressors. So we have this patient we described before who was started on carboplatin, pemetrexed, and pembrolizumab. After two cycles, he was found to have rapidly progressive disease with a new pleural effusion. He was feeling short of breath. He was losing weight. Which of the following is the most appropriate next step? A, continue carboplatin, pemetrexed, pembrolizumab, as this is likely pseudoprogression. B, switch to nivolumab. C, switch to docetaxel ramucirumab. D, switch to afatinib. Or E, unsure. In this case, I would say that the best answer of these choices is C, switch to docetaxel ramucirumab. Let's explore the data to try to figure out why. So first, let's talk a little bit about pseudoprogression. When we gave someone cytotoxic chemotherapy or targeted therapy in the past, if we did a scan and the tumor was growing, we would stop the treatment. However, in immunotherapy, there is this experience that has been reported where the tumor can get bigger followed by regression. And clinically, we have no way to distinguish this from true progressive disease. This was the origin of the IR-RECIST measurement, but it's important to remember that in order for it to be even considered pseudoprogression, the patient must be asymptomatic. We need to get a second scan at least 4 weeks after the first to confirm or refute progressive disease. But it's difficult to know what to do if that second scan shows no further growth. By technicality, it would be progressive disease, but it feels uncomfortable to stop a drug when the cancer is no longer growing. So how often does this happen? An FDA series was done looking at 503 patients on phase 3 PD-1 inhibitor studies where treatment past progression was allowed. And what you can see is that of patients who received treatment past progression, 121 of them, only 10 of them went on to have a subsequent partial response. So this is relatively rare, and it's important to remember that when we're talking about immunotherapy. Most of the time, when a patient has radiographic progression of their disease while on immunotherapy, they are truly progressing. The REVEL study evaluated the addition of ramucirumab to docetaxel in the second-line management of patients with platinum-refractory non-small cell lung cancer. Over 1,000 patients were randomized to docetaxel ramucirumab or docetaxel with placebo. And what we can see here is that the addition of ramucirumab was associated with a statistically significant improvement in progression-free survival. The toxicity with the addition of ramucirumab, it was not that much worse than what we expect to see with docetaxel alone, as you can see in this slide. Looking at the overall survival, we also see that there is a statistically significant improvement in overall survival with the addition of ramucirumab. If we look at an exploratory subgroup analysis, looking at patients who are truly refractory to first-line chemotherapy, we can see that these patients who do poorly with first-line chemotherapy have a more substantial benefit from the addition of ramucirumab, with an overall response rate of 23% as opposed to 13%. So this could identify a subgroup of patients who are particularly able to benefit from this combination. So in summary, pseudoprogression is relatively rare in immunotherapy for non-small cell lung cancer. The addition of ramucirumab to docetaxel did improve progression-free survival, overall survival, and overall response rate, but this benefit may be amplified among patients with rapid disease progression. The key takeaways from this exercise is that when a patient is a candidate for an FDA-approved targeted therapy for non-small cell lung cancer, it really should be used first line. For patients who have PD-L1 greater than 50% staining, without a targetable aberration, first-line therapy can be either pembrolizumab monotherapy or carboplatin pemetrexed pembrolizumab. My current practice has been that for patients who are doing well and are not in extremis, I tend to use pembrolizumab monotherapy, reserving platinum doublets for next line or utilizing a clinical trial. The third point is that docetaxel ramucirumab is a reasonable option for patients with platinum refractory non-small cell lung cancer, particularly those with rapidly progressive disease. I'd like to thank you for participating in this activity, and have a great day.
This CME activity was provided by Access Medical Education. To receive your free CME credit or to view the entire presentation, go to reachmd.com/AccessMedEd. Thank you for joining us.